Well, we're going to continue chatting with Christian Day, and we'll also take your phone calls. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Christian, let's get back to hexes. I'll ask you if spells work, and then we'll take phone calls for the rest of the hour. Hexes, who puts them on people? Anybody, I guess, huh?
Well, it's just like magic is a form of energy. So it can be used negatively, positively, you know, for good things, for bad things. I think that it's just like anything else. I mean, let's take the human hand.
All right.
And we're all birthed with hands. Well, most of us anyway. And
Yeah. We
can use them to make things. You know, we can use them to type letters and, you know, things to do good for the world. We can also use them to attack people. Hopefully we don't. You know, and magic is like that. You know, magic is at its heart amoral. It is simply is. It can be used for a variety of things. I think what's important to note is that, you know, there is a natural balance of justice in the world, and that if you use magic to hurt people constantly. Now, I don't necessarily believe in the Wiccan idea of a threefold law where everything comes back to you three times. And I don't even necessarily believe in karma in the most commonly understood sense. But I do believe that if you live a life of violence, you'll attract it. You know, it's almost biblical. You know, the idea that, you know, he
sure.
who lives by the sword will die by the sword. I mean, I believe if all you do in life in the tangible world is be violent to people, you'll attract somebody who's going to want to take you on. You know, see if, you know, they're tougher than you. You know, it's sort of like gang violence. You can see that play out that way. Well, magic is very much the same. You know, if I did all day was hex and hurt people or curse them, I must be a really miserable person, and eventually someone's going to come along and curse me. So well, that kind of magic, though real, must be used extremely judiciously. You know, and so in old times when, you know, only people with money got justice and pretty much the priest would tell you to say a few prayers if something happened and your daughter was raped, well, you went to the witch. And they might do a reading to make sure that, yes, your daughter was really raped and there's something really happened. And then they would, you know, if they felt that your cause was just, they might hex that person. But that doesn't necessarily mean they wanted the person to die. It might mean they want the person to be brought to justice. You know, that person is no longer able to harm someone else. You know, the best kind of hexes are the ones that stop people from doing the harm. You know, what you call a binding spell.
Right.
You know, something where I might take a poppet. You know, one of the oldest forms of magic is poppet magic, or what some people call a voodoo doll. You know, I might make a doll of you know, if I knew there was a child molester loose in the streets of Salem, I might make a poppet doll of that person. You know, and I might bind it in black thread on a Saturday to make sure I got all that Saturn energy to bind the person and stop them from harming people. You know, and it may bring them to justice.
It might.
You know, and if something happens to them, you know, other than that, you know, that's the way justice works. You know, if the person...
Well, would you feel sorry?
Cliff, you know?
I mean, would you feel sorry if that happened? Let's say you did that, you got the little voodoo doll, you did what you had to do, and all of a sudden the person, you wanted the person captured, stopped, but he gets killed in a car accident.
Right. Would I feel, I would certainly feel something about that, absolutely. And it's interesting because that's a tough question because it makes us face the fact that sometimes in order to enact justice, it's not always easy. I mean, there are times that police have had to use force to actually shoot to kill someone that was causing harm. These are difficult moral quandaries, but they are those gray areas within which a real witch lives. I mean, you know, real morality is not black and white. You know, it's often, you know, those kinds of instances that are not so easily decided. Certainly, you know, any witch worth their salt is going to honor life as sacred and to feel that any loss of life, you know, before their time, before the natural progression of old age and, you know, that sort of thing, of nature, that any sudden loss of life is a bad thing. You know, and it's not something we wish for. So we always try, you know, if we need to quote-unquote hex somebody, you know, the goal is not to, you know, send them falling off a cliff. Hopefully it's to, you know, have them see the better, you know, the error of their ways and look towards a better reality. But there are times when force is necessary. And hopefully it's always a last resort. You know, hopefully it's always a last resort. But I think that when you're a person who lives a life of magic, you know, you have to swim both ways sometimes. And it's not, you know, as a witch, we're almost honor bound or oath bound to help humanity. You know, we are there to be able to serve the people who seek us out. And sometimes it isn't always pretty. You know, someone might come to us who's a drug addict or, you know, they have problems and we're trying to magically help them to reach a better place. And often there's a tough love element in that. You know?
I'm sure some defense attorneys truly don't want to represent certain people, but they have to.
Exactly.
Now, the spells themselves, why do they work? Surely you don't need the lock of a hair of an individual or these concoctions. Some are done for fun, but why do the spells work?
Well, I want to back up on the surely you don't need part.
Okay, okay.
Well, because, you know, look at the popularity of things like DNA testing these days. You know, a lock of hair contains the genetic patterns and codes of the person. And it's what in magic we call an object link. Everything in the universe contains energy. Our thoughts are a form of energy. So when you lower your brainwave into an alpha state, into when you're actually relaxing into an altered state of consciousness, where magic works, it's scientific. You know, if you take the Silva Method classes, I think it's at silvamethod.com. It's not called witchcraft, but it's a psychic, you know, I use it because it's a psychic level of mind to help us develop an altered state of consciousness. And to do that, you're living in a place mentally where you're able to tap into those levels of intent that actually make the change in reality, the shift in consciousness. But now you add in, you know, this is where they wouldn't necessarily tell you this in a Silva class, but then you take in those energies that exist within other things. You know, the lock of hair creates an energy link to the person whose hair it is. You know, light carries information, travels at 186,000 miles a second. We're able to send energy back and forth. That's how psychic information is able to move from person to person. And so we're able to tap into the energies of other things using those object links. And sometimes it may be a picture of the person, which isn't so much DNA, mm-hmm. but it creates that psychic visualization for, you know,
that
it helps
image.
Us to focus. Absolutely. So, you know, they're not just props. You know, you take a candle, for example. A candle emits energy. It creates heat and light and, you know, color and all of that. And so for me, candle magic is probably my favorite thing. Like Fiona says, it's really one of the easiest things. You can get candles at Walmart. So, you know, it becomes a very easy spell. And you can, you know, leave a candle, you know, hopefully not unattended, but, you know, let it sit there for a while and do its magic. And you don't necessarily have to be watching the thing. You know, you can be sitting back, watching your TV show, you know, the candle's over there in the corner, you know, not left unattended. And, you know, you might be having a pink candle there doing your love magic. But the important thing is that you put your energy into it. So you might hold the candle tightly, putting all of your emotion and your heart and your passion for what you want into that candle. You might anoint it with oils. You know, you might put some rose oil or jasmine or ylang ylang oil if you want a lover. You know, a little cinnamon oil or if you want some money, you know, on a green candle for prosperity or, you know, a pink candle for love. And you have them doing their thing. And once you've energized them, or what they call blessed, you know, when you bless a candle, what it really means is you're putting your energy into it so it can do its thing while you're not paying attention. That's one of the reasons candles are so great, because they're continuing to emit a sort of change. You transform the energy. So it's no longer just that simple candle flame. It's actually sending out your thoughts. And so, you know, the lock of hair can actually be a very important object link, because it actually contains the DNA. It's something that they don't necessarily know on an intellectual level, but on a subconscious soul gut level, the ancient practitioners knew that this had power. You know, now we can say it's called DNA, but they knew all along that there was something to it.
Let's go to the phones. They're stacking up for you, Christian. We'll go to Valerie in Los Angeles. You're up with us, west of the Rockies. Hey, Valerie.
Well, good evening, everybody. I am absolutely having a blast listening to your show, which my boyfriend was the one that turned me on to it to begin
good
with.
Good boyfriend.
Who I happened to meet through witchcraft, as a matter of fact. But just to give a real quick touch, absolutely on the energy part when it comes to spells. And just using Christianity, because it is such a large religion and people do relate to it, it is the exact same thing as the power of prayer. Many religions use candles as focal points to set forth energy. Again, just using a spell is the exact same thing as saying a prayer. It's putting that verbal energy into the universe and letting it take its course. Also wanted to touch on, you guys are neglecting us solitary practitioners. I've been a solitary practitioner for well over 20 years.
Now, what's a solitary practitioner?
It's somebody who does practice witchcraft. I actually happen to, I would say, consider myself Wiccan, but I've been practicing witchcraft by myself for well over 20 years, not belonging to a coven, although I have been asked quite a few times, because I have friends both on East Coast. Bi-coastal witchcraft started on the East Coast, brought it with me to the West Coast, have many friends who I have helped along the way in introducing them to the witch Wiccan way, and have become an age to where I would be considered the crone or the teacher, because I have been in it for so long, acquired a vast amount of knowledge, have done quite a few spells, have given spells as gifts. It is a wonderful, wonderful lifestyle. Again, it is, like Fiona was saying earlier, it is becoming very mainstream these days.
Let's get your reaction to this, Kristen, and thanks, Valerie.
Yeah, well, I think Valerie raises a really good point that I'd like to address, and that is that I think there's a modern interpretation of this idea that a witch belongs to a coven. Now, I happen to have a small coven of people that I work with that, you know, my friend Sean, who's now departed, founded years ago. But my own personal belief about witchcraft is that it is fundamentally a solitary path. So I think, to me, what Valerie is doing is the archetypal role of the witch. The witch often lived, they were alone. You know, they were on the edge of a community. They were often chastised or rejected, but sought after in the dead of night, of course. And those people often performed healing tasks and services for their community, but they didn't usually have a whole group of people that they were able to work with. Most of the time, they worked alone. And, you know, you might ask, well, where did they learn it? Well, most of the time, it was passed on in families. You know, your grandmother taught it to the granddaughter, or the mother to the daughter, or the, you know, sometimes the father to the son. And basically, it is fundamentally a solitary path, witchcraft. So, you know, I apologize if we didn't focus on that, but, you know, I want to shout that out to Valerie, because in my opinion, that's the core of what a witch does. The archetypal relationship of most religions is between the priest and the collective laity, and the laity with one another. But in witchcraft, it's different. It's a very one-on-one relationship between the witch and not her coven, but between the witch and those non-witches, and sometimes witches, who seek her out. So those regular, ordinary people that look to Valerie for magic and help and spells, she is performing that classic function of the witch. So it's not about coven. I mean, I happen to have one, but quite honestly, I like to jokingly refer to it as an ad hoc coven, because we don't meet at every holiday. We don't meet at every full moon. We basically get together when we need to. You know, if we need to perform magic, we will. But by and large, we're a coven full of solitary witches, so I have a total respect for that. Absolutely.
Let's go to Mike in Florida. You're on with us, Michael. Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Christian, I have got to thank you and Fiona for coming on tonight. You guys did such a phenomenal job. I teach myself. I'm a no-name down here in Florida. I mean, my town knows who I am. Some of them like me, some of them don't. Your view on hexing, it was phenomenal, your explanation of it. I've been teaching my students that, and most of them came to me. It's like, oh, no, Wiccans don't hex. I'm of the Wiccan path. We don't hex. I say, yeah, we do. But it's I use a joking term, the Wiccan atomic bomb, because we don't use it often. I've never hexed anyone. I try not to. I try to use a positive approach on all things, a protective approach, before I have to go back at somebody. Your views are, this is the best show I've ever heard, explaining our paths. And, I really have to thank you.
Well, thank you.
You are phenomenal. And for our honeymoon, I'm hoping my wife and I are going to be able to get up to Salem at some point in the next couple of years.
Well, make sure you book early, because our hotels tend to book up for October the year before.
Well, I don't know what time of the year we're going to get up there, but we've been married for 11 years now. And also another point I'd like to make is the fact that you pointed out that we are servants of the community. I love all spiritualities. I love my parents are Catholic. I love that they support me. They may disagree with me, but they support me. I have a lot of friends that are Christian. I specifically work. I do counseling also. And I work with the Christian motorcycle riders. I happen to be a biker. When a Christian comes to me, I try to send them to these guys, to the chaplains in their group, to reinforce their religion, as opposed to me saying, well, you know, you can't find help where you're at, you come to me. I find, Christians that I trust that treat me with respect, and I send them to them. And I just really like the fact that you pointed out that we are servants of our community, to all people.
Well, I think every witch needs to ask themselves, what are you doing for humanity? What am I doing to help other people? When I created Festival of the Dead, for example, I had a choice at that juncture, at that crossroads, and the crossroads is a place of magical power. And I said, do I create this witch festival, or do I take death, something Americans run so frighteningly away from, and explore it from all angles? And last year that culminated in my friend Pastor Phil Wyman, who has a church called The Gathering, and it's kind of that emergent church, I think they call it. It's a more cutting-edge evangelicalism. And I went to him and I said, have a million tourists come to Salem in October. And if I'm here to serve people, to help them better understand death, for me to do this truly, genuinely, I need to understand that there are people from different faith communities wanting this information. So why don't you do something that helps the Christians explore death? And we called it the Brimstone Chronicles. And he had a really good turnout. It was at his church, and he threw us in coffins and locked us in bank vaults and made us drink the wine of the everlasting covenant. It was all very interesting.
As long as it wasn't blood.
There were a good number of witches there. But, it was so interesting because people were so emotionally touched by that event, even the non-witches, because it was, it gave people the truth of what Christians believe about the afterlife and how they react to it, and not just the fire and brimstone and the scare. It was actually quite a beautiful event that talked about the goodness that Christianity brings to the ideas of the afterlife and how it helps us to feel better about where we're going. And, I just, for me, he said to me, Phil, we were on the cover of the Wall Street Journal together because he was thrown out of his church for being friends with witches. His denomination cast him out, basically started a new one. And he asked me, are you going to be upset if I tell people who come to Salem about Christianity and Jesus? I said, I just don't want them to be bored. I said, are you serving humanity? Are you helping these people to confront their own mortality? Well, if you're doing that, then I'm doing my job, because that's what I'm there to do in October, is to help people confront death. And so for me, I can't just say, well, I'm only going to teach my spiritual path. No, I'm going to give it all. And
all
I'm
right,
going to look at every angle.
We'll be back with final phone calls with our guest, Christian Day, on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Sidney Kirkpatrick joins us. We're going to talk about the life of Edgar Cayce, an American prophet. Back with Christian Day, final phone calls. David in Georgia, you're up with us. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hey, good evening. This is David in Devil's Pond.
Yes, sir.
What I was calling about, well, I actually had two questions. One was, when witches sort of became mainstream, one of the first celebrity witches was one named Sybil. I remember years ago.
Love her.
What was her name?
Sybil Leek. I have a number of her. All of her books are out of print now, I believe. And I managed to get a number of them on eBay. And I strongly recommend her. She was from the New Forest Coven out in Britain.
What?
And
yeah, I remember her, and that was it.
Yeah, she came out to live here in America. Her name was Sybil Leek. She's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, celebrity witches.
Well,
phenomenal.
Well, thank you. What my main question was, Fiona said earlier that, hey, if you're a witch, you know it. It's not, you just know it. how about these people that, you know, present themselves to others as witches, you know, that maybe that y'all feel that you might feel it would be a fraud? Do you feel it your part to expose them as a fraud?
Well, you know, that's a tough line to walk, because I've often seen people in the witchcraft community spend a lot of their time pointing the finger at people that they think are misrepresenting us. And, you know, like Fiona said, sometimes they point the finger at us. But, you know, I don't want to spend my time pointing the finger at what isn't. I would rather, it's sort of like at the beginning of the show we talked about witches not being devil worshippers. I prefer to spend my time focusing on what I am as a witch. This is what I do. And I feel that if I live that and I portray that strongly enough, it will outshine people that are not genuine. I think that's true in anything. You know, it's like you'll remember Aretha Franklin long after you'll remember Britney Spears.
True.
You know, I mean, it's just true talent shines. And great talents outshine those that don't have it, you know. And I think that I could spend my time doing that, but I feel like I don't want to be the police of other people. I want to help people.
Right.
So
and it's not your role, Christian.
I'm sorry?
And it's not your role to be the policeman.
Right, yeah. So that's kind of my take on it. I'm not saying there aren't fraudulent people, but there are fraudulent priests, there are fraudulent policemen, there are fraudulent doctors. There's fraud in everything, and maybe there are groups out there that, you know, need to be addressing that. But for me personally, and I'm only speaking for me here, I don't want to spend my time focusing on those people. I'd rather focusing on what I do and the people that I agree with and the people who are doing the work I really respect, and lifting them up, you know, and saying, well, these people do great work, so let's talk about that.
Okay, next up, let's go to Colleen in Michigan. You're up, first-time caller line. Hi, Colleen.
Thank you. Hi, George. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. I have a question for Christian. I'll make it quick. Something very strange happened tonight. I was at a bar. There was a long line of people, and it was a card reader, a tarot card reader. And I couldn't get in line quick enough. I have this burning question that I need answered. As it got time for me to go up to her? This little voice inside of me, and mind you, this is a question I'm dying to have answered. I just, like, something told me, go. She's not good. She's bad. I mean, just strange. Just something in me, no matter how bad I wanted this answered, I walked away. I got a drink, was getting ready to leave. I used the bathroom. As I'm opening the door to leave the bathroom and go out, she's close to 6 foot tall. She's standing right there, not like kind of trying to go in or anything, just almost like she was waiting for me. And as I opened the door, she looked down at me, was staring right at me, and she had a card in her hand, and she said, look, I don't normally do this, but here's my number. Go ahead and call me as long as it's before 7 this morning, and I'll go ahead and answer your question. And then she was just gone, or I almost blacked out. I thought, oh, my heart, I don't know. I mean, I've been to psychics before and tarot card readers. It's been years and years, though. I haven't felt the need to go. And then tonight for me to go there and her be there when I have this question I'm dying to know, but then something just told me to walk away, and I'm not normally like that. And I just wanted to ask Christian, does this sound strange to you? I mean...
Oh, not at all. I think, first of all, I think there's a little bit of witch in all of us. You know, I think we all have that magical core that we can discover. And so, you know, I'm not saying that was necessarily a sign that this person was negative. It could have been a sign simply that you aren't ready to hear the answer.
Oh, no, no. Believe me, I'm ready. I got my big girl panties on. I want to. She never, Kristen, her and I never made eye contact. She didn't know I was in line. Or it's not like I just walked away and said, oh, no, I can't. Sorry, bye. There were two girls in front of me.
I think what I would say in all of this is, I'd probably want to get the answer from her, because she sounds like she certainly has a little bit of zap. That she was able to know this. You know what I mean? I'd want to go and see. That's what I would do. You know, if I was you standing in line and...
Even though I got that weird, strange feeling I should maybe go to somebody else, you really think I should go to her? I mean,
I'm telling you what I would do in your situation. Right. If I had a weird feeling about it or a fear, yes, I would give credence to my fear, but if... then it happened as you just said it happened, I would absolutely, I'm very intrigued. Even when I think it may not always be the best thing, I still will sometimes play on that side of it, you know, maybe, oh, let's live a little risky, you know. I just, that would impress me. Those kinds of things always do. You know, and there are stories that have happened to me like that, you know, and it's, so I think this validity that we're all kind of connected on some level. So I really feel that person probably has a message for you.
East of the Rockies, Eric in Texas. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, this is a really cool show. I mean, this is like a refresher course / CEU or a continuing education unit. you guys really did a phenomenal job tonight, first of all. Christian, I've got a question for you. Let me set it up with a little scenario, if I might, so that way you kind of understand where I'm coming from on this. Let's just say that, you know, somebody is alleged to have done something that might, you know, horrify or, you know, be adverse to some community, even though that they never really did anything to them. You know, their sources are basically the media and rumor and so forth and so on, but yet there are people within these X communities that would go out and pursue this person and so forth and so on, basically try to shut them down, try to bring them, quote-unquote, to justice, so forth and so on. What, you know, and here it is that they're, and of course, mind you, that they're doing this with very vague, if not very incomplete information at best. What are the ramifications that can come of such a thing, especially if these people are conscious of, you know, the craft and manipulation of power and so forth and so on?
God, you've described periods of my life.
I can speak from experience, but I won't go there.
Well, I have been the victim of rumor and innuendo in the past. You know, this is a business community here, and yeah, it can be kind of that way. But honestly, it's like, from my vantage point, before I would pursue anything like, you know, the work of justice, I think it's so important to do a reading, you know, more than one reading. You know, often when I'm dealing with issues that are those gray areas, mm-hmm, I want to be very sure. I never want to be part of a mob mentality. I don't think that usually comes to any good end.
How do you know that you're getting a good, accurate reading, though?
Well, if you're, you know, a good psychic, you've been able to determine that through trial and error.
Okay.
You know, it's like anything else. If every reading you do is false and the information is incorrect, then you know you're probably not very good at it.
Well, and true. And if you're too close to the problem, or you make yourself too close to the problem, you don't get accurate.
Yeah, but then you should know better anyway. You know what I mean? If I were too close, like if it was involving my mother or something like that, you know, I would want to get the reading from somebody else.
Right.
You know, I might not do my own reading. Like if I says, well, okay, I really feel this was an injustice here and I want to use magic to correct it, I will sometimes go to third parties, and it's not to diminish my own psychic ability, but sometimes your emotions can cloud your vision and your intuition, and, you know, because all those things are connected.
Right.
So I might go to a third party to get clarity. I mean, I think what's most important is that we need to act ethically as human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, ethics and morality are different. You know, morality is all rules, but ethics for me is thinking about your choices before you make them. And so, you know, if you really thought about the things you were going to do, you probably wouldn't end up in that mob mentality. I've been the victim of it. You know, and every once in a while in my life, I've, you know, fed into a mob mentality. I mean, we all have at some point or another, you know, got caught up in the groupthink of something. But I think it's important as human beings, and especially as witches, to realize that your energy and will are being manipulated, and that you want to bring it back to your core and back to your center, so you act in a just way.
Okay, great. Thank you for that, Christian. David in Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh,
hey, David.
Great. Good evening, George and Christian. I just hello? Are we there?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, yeah.
Yep,
well,
yep.
It's just kind of ironic that we, on the witch show night, we have Deacon Punnett's smiling face on the webpage.
And, oh, he's now a deacon.
Yeah. I have a little story, and a good friend of mine tells me I'm really trust this person, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't like embellish things, but anyway. And he was living in London, this would be in the late 70s, with a woman who was a witch. And apparently this woman was kind of, with her little witch group, was involved in sort of some witchy battles with a group they figured was dark, shall we say. And so anyway, the story goes, they're in this pub, and he was with his girlfriend, and this fellow walks in that goes to confront his girlfriend. And so he steps in. He ends up in a physical altercation with this fellow. My friend is about 6 foot, probably would have been about 200 pounds. This fellow apparently would maybe five and a half feet tall. And he tried to, like, push him. He couldn't be pushed. He ended up on the other side of the room. He threw a pool ball at the fellow. Apparently, the story goes, the pool ball stops about a foot away from the fellow's head and drops straight to the floor.
Yeah.
And then he tried it again. Same thing happened. The fellow walks up to him and lifted him off the ground and pushed through him through the window of the pub. And he left.
That wasn't Chris Angel, was it?
And, no. I wouldn't think so. But anyway, so thought I'd relate that little story about sort of Harry Potter for real. And if you're going to let me go on... I'm a witch. I just thought I'd mention to my son's name is Salem, his first name.
Oh, very cool.
And apparently Salem was quite a popular first name back in sort of whaling days in New England and stuff. It's not,
I got my name because I was born on Christmas Day.
Christian, have you, I like that. Have you ever come across a practicing witch who had incredible powers?
Well,
nothing
of that magnitude. And, you know, that's where the Scully side of me kicks in that would say, you know, I probably have to see that one, you know. But I'm not going to rule it out because I think that there are people whose energy is probably powerful enough, their aura. You know, it's sort of like people that break boards and, you know, things with their chi energy and that sort of thing. That's something I think that can happen. I haven't witnessed something of that magnitude where I, you know, throw something. Well, I've never thrown anything at a person, but, you know, where that's happened, you know, people could stop something with their own aura energy, but I believe it can happen. I think there are people out there whose mind power is strong enough that they can manipulate things. I've seen things close to telekinetic energy where people have made things fall off of tables and off of walls, and I've seen things like that. So it's nothing as fantastical as stopping a pool ball in midair. But
okay,
I think it's possible.
All right, let's go to Marie in Illinois. One or two more questions to go. Hi, Marie.
Hi, George. Hi, Christian. First of
Hi,
all,
Marie.
I'd like to say fantastic show. Also, I was wondering, if a person has a kinship with animals where things like a wolf or a raccoon or a deer, and people think that they're kind of weird and that, because this happens to me, and the neighbor's dogs, when they get loose, I'm the first person that they run to. I just, you know, I don't understand it. I leave myself open to all different aspects of life, and I was just wondering what your opinion of that was, and I do have a tendency to have precognition of things that happen.
Well, I'll tell you something. What was your name again?
Marie.
Marie. It's definitely a sign of witchcraft, or that a person is a witch, that they have a kinship with the creatures of nature. And the earliest witches were essentially shamans. You know, before they were cast out as heretics and crazy people, you know, we were the shamans of the tribes, and we were people that used power animals and native spirits and the energies of animal totems and the like, you know, that are still done in some tribes today. And that's a very important thing, because it's a way that those shamans and mystics and healers were identified. So you, in a sense, are exhibiting one of the signs of magic, of witchcraft, that you have a kinship with the creatures of nature. That's absolutely a sign. And when Fiona talked about discovering your own, you know, that you're a witch, when you're discovering that, that's what she's talking about in a way, I think, you know, that you'll find these signs and wonders, as they say in the church, you know, that you're looking and noticing that you have a power that other people don't have. It sort of separates you out. And that's a very powerful way, is a kinship with animals that is above the normal means. You know, it seems like they all come to you and they seek you out. Absolutely.
You know, Christian, I joke with Fiona about getting on her witch and on her broom and being flown away. And, you know, she's got such a great sense of humor. It makes it fun to be able to kid her like that.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think you've got to be a little self-deprecating when you do something as weird as witchcraft. I mean, let's face it. This is not something every normal person does.
No.
I get it. I get up every day and I say, wait a minute, my career is witchcraft. This isn't something, you know, every person does. They probably think I'm a little strange. And that, I get it. I play with it. You know, and I think that, you know, if you can laugh with people about some of the things that are funny about magic and witchcraft, people are more comfortable with it. I think it's why I don't really deal with a lot of prejudice. I don't. People have been very accepting of me in my town. They're very respectful of the business work I do, and I work in tourism. I sit on committees and things throughout the city for tourism and promotion and marketing and things that, you know, I draw from my advertising background that have nothing to do with witchcraft. And they can get past that because I'm part of the joke. I'm part of the fun because this is a little weird. I mean, I get it, but it's also very magical and powerful. And I think that once people can get past that it's weird, they can take part in that magic and power.
Well said, my friend. You take care of yourself, Christian, and who knows, one day I may wander into the Hex store in Salem, Massachusetts.
Well, you have a great night now.
All right. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.